Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work Plus. Today's episode is going to be an MCU deep dive into what we are calling our Mount Rushmore of directors. That's right, a quick Marvelette for you talking about who are four, not even just favorite, but the Mount Rushmore four directors in the MCU that we kind of hold on a higher pedestal for whatever reason than some of the others. And I'm really looking forward to this bonus discussion, Robbie, because I have no idea what you're going to choose. I think I know two of them that we're going to be exactly the same on. And again, I promise we haven't talked about this at all, but I think those last two spots might be the spots where there's some room for discussion.
Can I say real quickly just to frame how I and you and I haven't even talked about this. So this is what I love about this exercise is everyone can sort of approach it in their same way or in their own way. The way I'm viewing this is who are the four directors or teams of directors in the MCU that if you pulled them out, it would be a radically different thing. That's how I'm viewing it. Which like is, you know, and I say that because importance in multiple ways, like almost as much for me, just whether it's subject matter or tone or like contribution. I say that because we could have a different discussion that I think would be a lot more predictable maybe for people of me just saying my top four, because my top four directors would probably look like the first four names you find on my list of best Marvel movies.
All right.
So that's what I'm, again, like if you want it to be your favorites, it's however you view the exercise, but that's kind of how I'm viewing it here.
So we'll go every other and see if we disagree anywhere. But on the count of three, let's just say our first one, the obvious no-brainer. Ready? One, two, three, Joe and Anthony Russo. You didn't say it.
Wow. See, I wanted to hear you say it and not hear myself say something.
Right. That's the obvious slam dunk. No real need for debate there.
Yeah, I think that's right.
On so many levels, you cannot tell the story of the MCU without Joe and Anthony Russo. They directed Winter Soldier, Infinity War, Endgame, and Civil War. So four of my top 10 MCU films, including my top two and maybe top three favorite. It's not just a favorite thing, though. I think for a long time, people just lumped them into, they're really good action directors, but really anybody could have done those stories. You know, like it was kind of like they made Winter Soldier and that was really revolutionary because it was so different from the previous Captain America. Some people didn't know how to feel about that, but it's like just a really clean, good movie. Then I think with like Civil War, there's this tendency to be like, they're just making a Marvel movie. And I think people forget that in some ways, Joe and Anthony defined what a quote unquote Marvel movie is. Like this didn't exist before them. And my second main point with them is I don't just think they're good. I now, in hindsight, think they were uniquely gifted. It was a perfect storm for them to handle those last Avengers movies. That Kevin would trust them to that, that they cared right. as much as they did, and their ability to balance the absolute juggling act that those films are is actually special, not just, oh, they're good directors.
Yeah, yeah. And the way that they utilized Marcus and McFeely, which we're not getting into yep. on the writing front, but that pairing, and because... Marcus and McFeely had done two projects before they worked with the Russos. And so the reason mm-hmm. I point that out is you can kind of see the difference that their direction makes with the same script. And in some cases, the same, in the case of the first Avenger, the same character. It is night and day.
I think there's a legitimate argument to be made that outside of the Marvel Studios headquarters, like outside of Kevin, Victoria, et cetera, Brad, outside of that, and maybe outside of Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans, that team up of four people yeah. are the most responsible party for the MCU right after that.
I think that's
Marcus McFeely, at least, and the
yeah,
Russo brothers.
Yeah. And at least in terms of what it became, because you're right. I mean, prior to 2014, the MCU was obviously very successful, but I think the things that ultimately came to define it, that people had the buy-in for, like those, I do think a lot of that came initially in Winter Soldier, and Civil War, I think, is even...
Yep.
It's funny because I don't think Civil War is a movie that a lot of non-diehards hold in as much esteem, not like... Like, it got great reviews, I think, but it just in terms of people visiting and revisiting. But I think that somehow, despite that, it was still a turning point. Like, I remember when that movie came out, and it wasn't this buzz of like, oh my gosh, this is like the craziest, like, next level Marvel thing, even in the way that like Thor Ragnarok was at the time. But I think that Thor Ragnarok, when it came, had the advantage of some of the momentum that really started with this movie.
Mm. Dude, like, the way they introduced like Black this, Panther like, and Spider-Man, are you kidding me in
yeah,
that movie?
Yeah,
are
well, you kidding exactly, me? Yeah. That's a great point. It's like from
the
that
whole
moment
movie
on,
is about Steve and Tony, and that's literally perfect. You wouldn't even have to do anything else. But then the fact right. that they also get us a Black Panther introduction and a Spider-Man introduction, and they couldn't have been any better? That's insane.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's telling that the most I think we were culturally, legitimately invested in the ongoing story in the MCU was between Civil War and Infinity War in some ways.
Yep. Uh-huh.
And I say that I think that now it's a different level of investment. It's like there's way more of like an online community here, and there are more people that cover all the news and the rumors. But in terms of people really feeling yes, this, right. like, oh my gosh, I have to see the next Marvel project.
The casuals.
Like, I see that they're building towards something, but I don't know what it is. And every movie's going to give me a new clue. Are we going to see Thanos in this one? Are the Guardians going to come to Earth in this one? Like, are Cap and Tony going to be talking again? It's like all of this stuff that was kind of born and even in some ways born out of Winter Soldier with the way that they kind of upended the status quo there.
Yep.
So yeah,
I can 100%. Argue that 40 to 50% of people that were fans of that era no longer really check in on the MCU. I think I could argue that for sure.
I think that's
Last thing, I said perfect storm. It is just absolutely crazy when you think about, it's a perfect storm of they had the right amount of knowledge about the comics and they care about the characters right. of those, but they also really, really care about film and like action sequences and how those go. But they also really cared about the actors they had. Like there's real relationships yeah. there that they realized the star power they had on their hands. It just yep. couldn't have been, and they had Kevin's trust. So that's why I say it's the slam right. dunk first head on the Mount Rushmore monument here. Okay. Why don't you go second? Who would be the second director on your Mount Rushmore?
So I think, and you know, I don't know that I'll have to think about the order that I would do these in. I think that they putting them first in some ways makes sense. In other ways, it we'll see. But the second proposal for me for our Mount Rushmore, when you were saying, you know, more than maybe any other people, they influenced and gave us the MCU that we know. I think that the only person I can think of on the directing front that contributed more would be Jon Favreau.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's on my list. It's my third, but yes, that he's on my list. Yep.
I think he would almost be my first, and I know that's controversial because he only directed two movies in the whole thing, and they were both very early on. But I really went back and forth, and you know, just I guess as kind of a spoiler for me, between him and Joss Whedon, because I think that Joss Whedon, in so many ways, you know, the Avengers is still kind of the template.
Oh, gosh.
But then I was thinking, you know, what did, you know, Joss Whedon brought in some elements of having worked on like Buffy and some sci-fi things, or, you know, almost fantasy, where he knew how to bring some of that onto the screen. But in terms of like, you know, when we look back at it, how much did Whedon add that wasn't already kind of at least seated in Iron Man and Iron Man 2 in some ways, like whatever you think about that movie. Like, I think that like, if we've said this 1,000 times, if you don't have the tone that we immediately start with Tony Stark, you don't have the MCU. It just doesn't work. Like, it's all built on that. And people at some points will say, you know, it's too jokey or whatever. But regardless, like the MCU is at its best when you have, it's like the, and that's why Marcus and Mephili are so great.
Yeah.
Yeah. The, like the when you slick, have the great, fast, like the great writing and instincts. But yeah, the like, cause even, I mean, that, what you're saying there, like that carries forward all the way, or at least like in some of my, like even scenes in Ragnarok, you know, like I'm not saying that Taika was consciously doing this, but this like two people talking at the same time and you hearing bits and pieces of things that are really funny, but they're obviously not even listening to the other. Like, it's an ongoing bit that starts with the Iron Man films and is something that like when you watch other things that Favreau has been a part of, like you see that that's kind of the way that he writes and directs. And so I think like, and my, you know, my final thing, and I want to hear you on this because I know that you are obviously the bigger Iron Man guy than me anyway, but I think the thing that ultimately would give this slot to him over Whedon for me is I don't think that there's anything stylistically from the first two Avengers movies that I was wowed by the way that I'm still wowed by the way Iron Man looked, like, and just all of the, like how cool of a concept it was, like the way that they come up with Jarvis and how that works and the heads up display. And so it's like, I think that Whedon to me as a writer, I mean, that's a whole other conversation because I actually really like a lot of his writing, but I think director wise, this is really where like the beginning was for me, like the root of all of it.
I love that you brought that up because what is a director's job? Ultimately, a director to me is like a producer of music where not any one category is he specifically responsible for. Like some people would push back and be like, well, some of the quick-witted, slick dialogue is from the writing or it's from RDJ. Like that was a huge thing. But the thing for me is that the director has to be a part of all of that. And Jon Favreau was a part of casting Robert. He's not editing the CGI, right? But he's a part of making sure that it goes through well. So when you look at a shot like the way Iron Man looks when he shoots that missile at the tank and it blows up and walks away, in some ways, that still looks as good as anything we've seen today, around 20 years later. And so he is a part of all of that. That's why I have to give him, you know, his props for all of those things, even though no one specific category is his doing. The second thing I'll say is, in my argument, I think that the Rousseau brothers and Jon Favreau are the only two directors I would say that you cannot tell the story of the MCU without. While I appreciate what Joss did, and he did so many amazing things with that first Avengers film specifically, I do think there's another reality out there where somebody else probably could have handled that. I just don't know that anyone was as uniquely gifted as John and the Rousseau brothers for their specific projects. And I'm with you in that, even in regards to those two, I'm not ranking them. But yeah, I don't think it's crazy to say that the MCU would not be where it is if Jon Favreau and RDJ hadn't done Iron Man, right? Like that was single-handedly the thing that launched and saved Marvel Studios.
And I think, you know, even again, this is not me dogging on Whedon at all, but yeah, I think you're right. Because he pulled over things that had worked well in the comics, especially in like recent Ultimate comics, and adapted those. He made some really important tweaks. This is not me at all downplaying how significant those were. But yeah, I think that the really, even when you just look at it from like a what was revolutionary perspective, like that they added in, you know, I don't know that you could read a ton of Avengers comics, and particularly the ones I just mentioned, and I think you would have a pretty good sense of what the movie could look like, in the same way that you could read a lot of Spider-Man comics from that era and have a pretty good sense of what Sam Raimi was going to do. Because in both cases, they had some really like TV movie friendly things to adapt, and they pretty much just adapted them. But I don't know that you could read every Iron Man comic that had ever come out, and I don't think that you would have known to pull like from that. Right. And yeah. so that also transitions me, although I'll toss it back to you, but that transitions me into who will be my third head on the Mount Rushmore. But I'm curious to hear who yours would be.
Well, and bonus points for Jon Favreau being an actor still in this entire series.
Oh, like, true.
He didn't direct, but he hung around for a long time. Still is around, technically. Okay.
Yeah, good point.
I would love to take the floor here because, as I said, I think that those two are the obvious two that need to be on there on anyone's list. Mm-hmm. From this point on, this is where I don't necessarily know. So let me just lay out a few things for you really quickly. I think an argument could be made for James Gunn, but there are things about James Gunn's tendencies that aren't my preference. And because the Guardians are a little bit isolated, I don't know if it fits in the role of importance relative to could you tell the story without them. I would also like to toss out Taika Waititi, but even I must admit that while he fundamentally changed the game with Thor Ragnarok, he's only done two films, and the second one was a very mixed response from not only critics and fans, but myself as well. I could toss out somebody like Joss Whedon, but as I said, even though those movies are awesome that he made, I'm not sure that there's a directorial touch that makes him so elite over someone else. So my point is, like, I feel like after those two slam dunks, there's going to be some personal bias here in what you choose. And yeah, I just don't know at this point. So with that being the massive disclaimer, I'm going to throw out my third, John Watts.
Wow. Okay. I thought that you might go for Watts.
So here's my argument really quick. I can be real brief with this.
Well, and I should just say as a disclaimer, this is one that is not on my Mount Rushmore.
Oh, really? Okay. So listen, I'm not sure this should be on a Mount Rushmore in terms of importance. Do I think you could tell the story of MCU without him? Probably. So that's where I say, like, my personal bias, I think this is just a preference answer a little bit.
Sure.
I think he handled some of the core aspects of Spider-Man as a young kid so well and brought us to a spot through the trilogy where I am as excited for Spider-Man as I've ever been now that I'm giving him props for that, basically.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And you know, yeah, the tone that he brought to that, and in terms of influence, I do think, I mean, those movies have been massive. No Way Home was monumental. And I think the sense I've gotten having read up on it is that a lot of that, in the same way that, you know, to your point, in the same way that Jon Favreau kind of came on board really pushing for a certain vision of Iron Man, I do think that's how John Watts seems to have been with wanting to do this kind of John Hughes thing with Peter Parker.
If you were to make another movie in the MCU, I think I would just be confident in the overall quality, basically, is why I'm giving him the spot.
Right.
But I'm excited to hear your third spot then, because like I said, I thought the first two were obvious. Now I don't really know.
Yeah. So this is why at the end of my last rant on Jon Favreau, I was talking about how you could have read all the Iron Man comics in the world and never have come out with the movie he made. I think that is even more the case with James Gunn. And I totally hear you whenever it comes to certain tendencies and preferences. But and by the way, you know, I'm not the Guardians guy primarily. Like, it's the movie that I will pick to rewatch. But
I think there's a little bit of personal bias there for me. That's all. Really, I do.
Because of off-screen stuff or on-screen stuff?
Well, first of all, on screen, as far as like, if you had to ask me my favorite trilogy, I would answer Spider-Man over the Guardians trilogy.
Sure.
Just for the consistency factor. But yeah, maybe a little bit of off-screen stuff is starting to bother me a little bit. Maybe.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie.
Well, I think that it is, and you and I had some conversations around the whole period with The Flash and Guardians both coming out. And so that's one thing where I've been more removed. I used to follow James Gunn online a lot, and now I don't really know what that even looks like.
And to clarify, he's not doing anything wrong, by the way. I don't want people to hear this and be like, oh, Kyle hates the guy. He's an awful human. He's also doing his job, which is now head of DC. So I understand some of the stuff he says. I a little bit get rubbed wrong about, like, it comes off with a little bit, in my opinion, of arrogance about, like, I know all about superhero films and like what I say goes, which he made some good films. I'm not saying that, but I don't. And then also just like his style of humor, you know that I feel about that.
Right.
Like what he's bringing does have a directorial touch, but it wouldn't be my favorite style of humor, right? Like I like more of the Jon Favreau RDJ humor, like quick, slick, and less like shock, gross, funny.
Yeah.
And if you know James Gunn, like now having watched all the Guardians, but especially like Suicide Squad, like the things he leans into are just not my preference. That's more what I mean. So I don't love when he then acts like, well, if you don't like this, you just don't know like how to make films. I'm like, well, I just don't love that side of it. But again, Guardians 1 is my third favorite movie in the MCU and one of my favorite movies of all time. And I love Guardians 3. So again, that's why I said I'm torn here. He might be my fourth. He might be my fourth still. I'm just saying.
Well, and I think for you, and this is maybe where, you know, as I back up, I look at the influence of him is like, even if Guardians weren't your number three, Infinity War, which really borrows a lot from what James Gunn put into the MCU, is your number one. And that's where I find myself thinking, like, what was his contribution, not just in terms of the characters, but like the way the characters are imagined. Like, that's what I mean. Like, there's no, but before that movie, there was no analog for that in the comics. The Guardians looked and acted so differently. And so to bring them in that way, and also to establish that style of comedy and that kind of world building within the MCU. Like we talked about when we first, you know, it's like the difference between seeing different places in the Thor movies, like we used to talk about, and seeing them in the Guardians movies. He opened up, like I'm almost looking at like, you know, corners of the MCU that were kind of introduced by certain folks. And I do think he gave us a whole brand of stuff.
I think you're right. I think he would probably be my fourth. I think you're right. You can never underestimate how revolutionary that first Guardians of the Galaxy film was. We had just never seen, like you said, exactly. We had never seen an analog to that ever in superhero films.
Yeah.
And we've talked about that movie so much, but yes, I think you're right. That's my fourth.
I was going to say, and you know, a lot of people would say the needle drop is a big contribution. Yeah. And it is, but that's again something where like part of the reason that Jon Favreau gets the position he gets for me is like, you know, granted, that's something that he, I mean, that was at the core of his Iron Man films as well.
Like from
the very, very beginning. And
the first
shot,
and right?
then I try to, yeah, exactly. And then I try to think back to like, I don't know that like Gunn has done such good work with that. And, you know, whereas like really we just had a couple of memorable AC/DC moments with Iron Man. Like we have had like banger soundtracks that have become kind of have cult followings of themselves. So he definitely evolved, but I do think it's interesting seeing how like even Gunn, I think deserves to be on the Rushmore, but used certain elements, you know, that were there and expanded on them. And that's what I think a great director coming in, you know, halfway through the Infinity Saga, that's what you need to do. And that's what the Russos did. Like you find what's good, you pull that out, you build on it. And I think he did a good job of that just in the big picture sense.
All right, two things before you say your last one. James Gunn would be my fourth. So my four being the Russo brothers, Jon Favreau, John Watts, and James Gunn. According to Looper, as you were talking, I Googled this, just interesting, they have every director in the MCU ranked. They have Joe and Anthony Russo, number two, John Watts, number three, Joss Whedon, and number four, James Gunn, with Favreau all the way down to seven. Since my four are done, I just want to quickly say a couple of honorable mentions here. Like I talked about how, like Taika, what's fascinating to me is Taika made one of the best movies of the year in Thor Ragnarok, and it's a top five MCU film for me. But for his lasting impact to be felt, I feel like I would have had to have felt more of that style of humor and tone going forward in other things. And I feel like the MCU itself kind of deemed it not as important. Because like when he made Love and Thunder and dialed it up a little bit, like it felt so out of place because no one had like taken what he had done in Ragnarok and run with it. So now it kind of feels like it's its own isolated thing, even though Ragnarok's a top five for me. And then the last honorable mention there is Ryan Coogler. And I love what Ryan Coogler meant to the MCU for so many reasons. And I think he has some incredible tendencies, instincts that he leans into, which are great. But neither Black Panther or Wakanda Forever are top 10 films for me. And I'm not sure I personally walk away from those movies really praising the director. I praise the music like crazy, which we should do a Mount Rushmore of composers, by the way. That'd be fun.
Yeah, for sure.
I praise the music and I praise some of the performances and the way that Chadwick changed that character forever. So obviously some credit given to the director, but I don't know that that's my lasting impact of those two films. So that's my last honorable mention. I'm curious to hear your fourth.
So that's perfect. My fourth is Ryan Coogler. And I say that for kind of continuing this same way I've been approaching it of who has kind of, again, none of it's single-handed, but who has left such a memorable and unique impression. And because I'm with you. Like, I mean, I do have Black Panther ranked really high, and I think I like Wakanda Forever more than some other folks. But it's not a preference thing. It's more like, I don't know that there's any other movie other than the ones that we've talked about, specifically Iron Man and Guardians, where the first outing, like introducing totally new characters, has felt that immediately iconic. And you can debate the various other considerations there. Like obviously there are things happening politically in the Black Panther movie that are not at play in Doctor Strange, but there are also things done there, like what we've talked to death about, like the Killmonger villain and the way that that's approached, the way that Wakanda is imagined, which I think is just as impactful as the way that like the Iron Man suit is first imagined, not in terms of like significance and movie appearances, but in how bold it was and in how like, I mean, there's a reason that that stuff got like these costume and production design Oscar nods that we haven't seen other projects get. Not saying other projects shouldn't, but my point is, it's like, yeah, I think talking about these different corners and things that are filled in, yeah, I mean, if you take out, granted, the Russos gave us Chadwick, which Ryan Coogler has given them a lot of praise for in interviews. Like, so the casting there, they again get some credit for. Again, casting director gets credit, but they were part of that. But the way, like, as much as we love the way that Chadwick portrays T'Challa in Civil War, and as great as the writing is there from Marcus and McFeely, I think that what Coogler did with both that character, the Black Panther as an entity, Wakanda, like the way that it like all of it shapes into like a very particular take. Like, it's not just, let's take this really cool character that like has this power set and he's a king, which is awesome, and we'll just like put him over here and make him really badass. Like, instead, he was really interested in telling a different story that like doesn't follow even the Stan Lee template, you know, that you can see followed through so much of the Infinity Saga, which is arrogant guy that gets brought down to earth and has to kind of rediscover himself. Iron Man, Doctor Strange, Ant-Man in some ways, Thor in some ways. Like, it's a totally different narrative, totally different arc. So I think that it's going to be interesting to see moving forward what that looks like, to your point. Like, do more things get picked up? I already think that there are things that we would not have gotten in Falcon and Winter Soldier if not for Black Panther. And I think that the same could maybe be said for the Brave New World film, but, you know, we'll reserve judgment. So I think that there are already implications, but I think that we'll have to, you know, we've got the benefit of hindsight as to what a 2008 film did from the Iron Man side. I think we'll have to have a bit longer to step back and see where Black Panther takes us, which only came out 5 years ago. But it's hard for me to see anybody else doing, especially having now kind of watched the Creed movies or the first Creed film that Coogler brought such a stamp to. Like, it's hard for me to see somebody else doing what he did there, or at least doing it as well as he did it.
Wholeheartedly agree. I think for me, James Gunn, Ryan Coogler would almost be interchangeable. So no pushback there. Almost just a preference thing fair. At that point. As a quick side note, a couple things. One, how crazy is it now in hindsight that the Black Panther character introduction in Civil War does flow so seamlessly into how he's portrayed in Black Panther, the film? Like, how in the world did they get that so right already? One of Black Panther's last lines in Civil War, revenge is consuming them, I'm done letting it consume me, like, the living are not done with you yet, feels just like it's ripped out of a Black Panther movie.
Uh-huh.
Like, the fact that they got on the same page for that portrayal is crazy to me. Just, I love how seamless that was. That's the kind of stuff that I loved about the MCU, you know?
Crazy. Yes, yeah.
And then lastly, as we do these kinds of episodes, all it usually does for me is inspire thoughts of other episodes. Like, now I kind of want to do an episode on a Mount Rushmore of directors or actors or something that you would like to see brought in. Like, if I had to give you a top six of either directors or actors that you would like to see join, that'd be a fun list to do on a bonus episode. We should do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I almost want to get into it now, but I'm like, no, that's going to be 30 more minutes. We'll save it for another thing.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I think that there are other, like, I've wanted to do that from a casting perspective. I would like to do that from, like, I want us to do a composer's existing Mount Rushmore. MCU composers, Mount Rushmore. But I would also like to do who are the composers that we would like to see brought in, and maybe on what types of projects. And yeah, same with actors. And I think that these are fun. I mean, there are some, especially kind of coming out of the summer, some actors that I've long thought about being good fits here, but that now I really want in and kind of have some roles that I would fan cast. So that's a, this can be a little,
yeah, that'd be fun.
An ongoing series of sorts.
Oh, a Mount Rushmore series. Add to the list. Here we go. This has been so much fun. Thanks for listening. We'll keep these kinds of episodes coming. And who's on your Mount Rushmore of directors? We'd love to hear from you at the FFW podcast or message us on Patreon, Substack, etc., or Discord. Just stay in touch. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time here on Friends from Work Plus.
Six months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. Prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.